Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have Mads Christensen from the Visual Studio team, and I'm pretty sure I just messed up his last name, even though I practiced. Mads, how are you?
You did good. You did good. Just good there, Jesse. I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Visual Studio 2022, it's very hard to say, is imminent. And I'm hoping that we can talk a little bit about what it brings to the table, what's better, what's new.
I would love to. It's really a big release this time. It's one that we're very, very proud of. And I think that everyone using Visual Studio will see that there's a difference, feel it like day to day when you use it every day. As most people do that use Visual Studio, they sit in Visual Studio for like 8 hours a day. And you'll be able to tell a difference. It's quite significant. And of course, a lot of you have already tried this right in the preview and given feedback and so on. And we've also heard the same thing from the preview users. So it's not just me saying some marketing stuff or whatever. It's actually something that's been echoed by thousands of users. So super excited.
Can you give me a sense of, I am working with the preview, so I certainly see what you're saying, but let's narrow in on some specifics about what you see as significant changes.
Yeah, I mean, the first one that's hard to kind of forget or to get around is the 64-bit, right? That is by far the biggest impactful change there is. And it's huge. It's a huge, huge change, not just in terms of what it means to the user using Visual Studio, but also what we had to go through internally to turn Visual Studio from a 32-bit application to a 64-bit was something that took a long time and impacted a lot of different aspects of Visual Studio, and actually more so than we thought. So when we set out with this, we knew we wanted to do 64-bit. We need to be able to scale with the hardware that people have for these large solutions. Some solutions, you're not going to believe how big solutions some people they have. We're talking thousands of projects per solution. It's crazy. And it's not as rare as you think either. But, you know, of course, it's not the 80% case. But it's very common to have 50, 100, maybe 200 projects in a solution. And so in those cases, we wanted to make sure that Visual Studio was smooth sailing and we could scale with all the memory, all the RAM that developers have on their boxes nowadays. And so that's how we started. But it was an onion peeling exercise, right? We didn't know exactly what it would take because Visual Studio, some parts of Visual Studio is pretty old, right? Like 20 years old. And so we didn't know, once we got down in those layers, we didn't really know what it would take to convert things to 64-bit. And so when we started out, we had no idea how long it was going to take. We didn't know if it was even feasible to do. And we didn't know what the impact was going to be on both scale and performance. So those things were something that kind of came to light as we went along. And it was a very, very interesting journey.
Let's talk a little bit from the programmer's side. What is 64-bit buying me in terms of performance, memory? Tell me about why I want that.
Right. So we knew that we were going to get some performance benefits from doing 64-bit. So but before we go to performance, let's talk about like scale and reliability, because that was kind of at the heart of the 64-bit transition. Today, if you open a large solution, that can take a long time because we need to load everything into memory. And if you hit the memory ceiling of like 3 gigs or whatever, swapping is going on disk and everything is slow. So when you open a large solution, it's going to take a long time. And we knew that if we could prevent any disk swapping from happening, if we could optimize how we deal with memory, then we could make that faster, right? But we could also make it more reliable because at some point, at some time, you would get an out-of-memory exception and that would crash Visual Studio. And so it might not happen right away, but it could happen like 10 minutes in while you're working on a project because it just takes a while sometimes for everything to be allocated and you're touching all the files and all the different projects that you know, requires more memory. And so by moving that to 64-bit, we're now seeing that we're hardly getting any out-of-memory exceptions and you're going to see a faster performance just because there's no swapping going on. But the big surprise was actually how much of a performance impact it had by moving, by optimizing the garbage collector, the .NET garbage collector inside Visual Studio. Because we don't have to run it as often anymore, which means that there are no longer deadlocks in Visual Studio or locks just waiting for the garbage collection cycle to have finished before it can continue on executing, you know, whatever it is that you're doing in Visual Studio. So we're running it in a server mode that really can take advantage of all that extra memory that you've got. And so as I said, we were surprised at how big an impact that actually had on performance. So you're going to see way less sort of UI hangs, way less waiting around. Things are going to be a lot snappier. And a big part of that is actually the garbage collection.
And given that, well, let's make it personal. I'm about to buy a new computer for development. So as you say, I'll be sitting at it 8, 9, 10 hours a day, and I'd like it to be as performant as possible. How much memory should I make sure I have in that box?
Oh, that's a good question. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not even going to consider something less than 8 gigs, right? Probably a lot more, at least double that. But I would say if you have 8 gigs, that's a good start. Then you can have a couple of instances, 2, 3 instances open, and it can use more memory than it was able to before. But if you have large solutions, if you routinely ran into like memory issues, go with 16, 32, or even more. Visual Studio is able to take advantage of all that. Very, very few people actually have a solution that would push the 16 gig memory allocation mark. Maybe if you have Visual Studio open, many, many days, and you use it to open all sorts of projects and solutions, you could hit that in a single instance of Visual Studio. But, you know, I've been running Visual Studio 2022 for a long time, even before we knew it was going to be called 2022, because we didn't actually know if we could have it ready in time. Because we were peeling that onion, right? We didn't know how long it was going to take. Right. So before we even knew it was going to be 2022, I've been running this on a 16 gig box, and I've never kind of hit the limit, but I've also not played around with like these huge solutions. But if you have like a regular solution, like 20 projects or something like that, if you've got 16 gigs, you're fine. If you've got 8 gigs, you're probably also just fine. And Visual Studio will be able to take advantage of that extra memory.
And so, if you go up to 32, 64, are you going to see a performance difference?
No, probably not. If Visual Studio was not able to fully utilize all your memory, let's say that you're considering going from 16 gigs to 32. If Visual Studio wasn't able, Visual Studio 2022 is not able to take advantage of all your 16 gigs just because you don't open anything that requires that much, then you probably won't get much going to 32. But you will get the scalability, right? You will get the ability to run multiple Visual Studios, multiple instances of Visual Studio with large solutions or whatever loaded in all of them, the more memory you've got. So, but with memory, it's always like more seems to be the better. If you can afford it, just get as much as you can. But I run 16 and I've never run into an issue here. So take that, your mileage may vary, and my solutions that I work on are different from yours. So take that with a grain of salt. Or maybe try it first, get the preview, get the install it and see if you have 16. If you need to move up to 32, you might not.
I assume that the preview that we have out right now is the last one, since you're launching in about a week. Is that right?
You would hope so. Yeah, no, that is right.
Okay, great. Let's return again to the perspective of the programmer. What am I going to see in the IDE itself that I'm going to notice in my day-to-day work?
So the first thing you're probably going to notice is the new theme, the new dark theme, which has been refreshed. I don't know if you remember in 2019. There was a big refresh of the blue theme. It turned from something that was good to something that personally I think was great. But of course, the number one feedback we got when we did that was, hey, what about the dark theme? We want a new dark theme. And so now it's here and it's gorgeous. And there's a blog post up there on the Visual Studio blog that's really interesting. If you like to know more about like colors and stuff like that, because they go into detail about why they did certain things when it comes to like accessibility and contrast ratios and familiarity and all sorts of aspects that, I, as a developer, I'm not a color person. I'm not a designer or anything like that. I don't know color theory is what I was about to say. And it's really, really just an interesting read. So you're going to notice that, and then you're going to notice the new icons. So brand new icons. And Jesse, just, a guess, how many icons do you think are in Visual Studio? How many ships in Visual Studio?
How many icons? So you're talking about things like it's locked, it's been modified.
Yeah, like icons. They could be like on the different menu items you see icons, or the toolbar buttons. Yeah, all so those are icons. Yeah.
It's got to be like 100, right? I know it's going to be more than that.
It's going to be more than that, yeah.
All right. How many?
4,000.
4,000.
4,000.
Good grief.
So you can imagine like the amount of effort it took to kind of revamp those. The problem with those were that they were too low contrast. They were too hard to see for people with like, that didn't see well and so on. And so they all got like revamped, and you know, every change takes a little getting used to, and some people are going to be like, no, you moved the cheese, you changed something that didn't need to be changed, and you know, move it back. But most people that we heard from really, really loved them. And it was a fun journey to be on, to see the progression of those as we moved along and all the different iterations they went through. And so I think the theme and the icons are what you're going to see immediately as being the things. But then when you start developing, there are more things that are going to be really, really impactful to you. There's going to be a bunch of small things, and we can talk about those, like tons and tons of small things, like quality of life improvement things. But then there are the bigger things, right? So hot reload being one of the biggest ones that we have. Hot reload everything everywhere. It's a fantastic thing, whether you're .NET or C++. Hot reload your running app, make some changes. Hot reload. It's an absolutely fantastic way of developing. And, you know, it's something we call the inner loop. The inner loop, you might have heard us talking about it before. It's kind of an internal term that started to bleed out when we're talking publicly as well. But the inner loop is what the developer does sitting in Visual Studio, writing code, testing, you know, unit testing, debugging, running, compiling. All that sort of stuff is something you do like many, many times a day. It's called what we call the inner loop. Okay. And the tighter the inner loop is, the faster and more productive you become. But also the more stuff that's previously maybe was not part of your inner loop, the more we can bring into the inner loop, the more productive you become, right? So you can think of something like CI/CD, have that integrated in a seamless way through, GitHub Actions, or you can commit directly from Visual Studio to your Git provider that kicks off CI/CD and all that sort of stuff. Or that you can run your unit test easily, live unit testing. You see, as you type your code, you can see whether the unit test now passes or fails again or whatever, right? So it's about like that feedback loop is tight, and that inner loop, your productivity is as keeps you as productive as possible. So something like hot reload is absolutely phenomenal, because you no longer have to do the dance where, you know, you run your app. Let's say it's a game. So you run your game, it opens up in a window, you kind of play your way to the place where you want to make a change. And then you close the game, make your code change, you have to run it again, play the game until that point, right, where you see that change and see whether or not it worked or not. And if not, you have to continue that over and over again. And now with hot reload, it's super, super cool, because you just run the app, you go to the place in the game you want to make a modification, you keep the game open, now you go back to Visual Studio and you make your modification. And either you click an icon, like a toolbar button that says hot reload, or you've configured it to do it on save. So once you just save the code file, let's say it's C# or C++, you'll see that update in your running app, in the game, whether it's like introducing new graphics or whatever, they will just show up and all your state is still there. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And you can imagine like what that will do to your inner loop productivity.
Yes, there are two pieces I want to differentiate. One is what you were just describing, and the other is from the perspective of a Xamarin programmer using XAML, the ability to make changes to the UI and see them instantly. Do they both fall under hot reload, or is there new terms for those? Or
no, they both fall under that same term, hot reload. There's a third one, actually, which is live reload on ASP.NET. So it's because sometimes the underlying technology for doing this is different, but from the user's perspective, it's the same thing that happened. So the way that it works for ASP.NET to reload a CSS file, right, or to apply a CSS style as it becomes valid CSS without you even having to save the CSS document is a very different mechanism than, let's say, you know, edit and continue a C++ game.
Yes.
Those are just in nature very different. But from the user's perspective, it's the same thing that happened. So I don't know if we're like at some point we're saying, okay, hot reload is just what we're going to call all of it as an umbrella term, or we're going to, you know, keep, maybe there are some internal differences and those names become a thing. I don't know. But I think as an end user, we should just all think of it as the same thing.
So just to dive into that for one more second, I know that when I'm using that with XAML, it's magnificent. I make a change in the XAML, and I instantly see it on the UI. Tell me a little bit about what I have to do to have that work with code changes.
Well, that's the beauty of this whole thing. You don't really have to do anything. So, Visual Studio have had this for a long time, something called edit and continue. And so the idea is that if you run your application with the debugger attached, right, you can set a breakpoint somewhere. You can hit the breakpoint. You can then modify your code and continue executing, and it will now take in your new code that you just added or you just modified. It's called edit and continue. So that is the base technology of a lot of this hot reload that you're seeing. And so we already had edit and continue. Didn't really have to do anything to get it. It was just always there, kind of. So you don't actually have to be. You don't have to have the debugger attached. You can run your app without having the debugger attached. The control F5 scenario versus the just F5 scenario, they both work with hot reload. And as I said before, either you can click a button on the toolbar, the hot reload button. So you make a code change, save the file or files, and then you click the hot reload button. And then what it does is that it uses that edit and continue technology under the hood to kind of move those changes into your running app. That's one way of doing it. Another way is to say on save, I want to enable hot reload on save. And so when you do that, you don't even have to click that button. It just happens automatically as you save the button. And then, you know, there's one even cooler, I'd say, which is the style sheet, the CSS for web developers, in that you don't even have to save the file. As you type the keystrokes to create a CSS rule or add a new property, once that property becomes valid CSS, it's automatically streamed directly into the browser and applies to the page. So you see it like instantly. It's absolutely ridiculous how fast that, like you can't even, it's instant. And so it's a fantastic sort of three-tier hot reload, depending on the technology you're using, how much we can actually see in real time. And you can do those dials to your needs, right? If you want to, if you only want it to be like every now and again when you manually click the button, that's totally fine. You should do that.
Let me take you in a slightly different direction. Can you talk a little bit about IntelliCode and the AI assisted coding? Because as far as I can tell, there's some really revolutionary pieces to that I've just begun to play with.
Okay. Yeah. IntelliCode is getting more and more interesting, I think. So IntelliCode is the name of the sort of the AI ML engine in Visual Studio. And it started back in 2019 with a way that it would tell you in through IntelliSense which of the item in IntelliSense you are probably most likely going to need, and it would bubble those up to the top and put a little star in front of them. So most people have probably seen that. It works for pretty much all languages. And the way it works is the way it still works today and how a lot of the other things about IntelliCode works. And that is about studying and create a machine learning model over code and lots of code. So not only does it index and understand a bunch of open source GitHub code that has a lot of stars. So it's not like just every repo. It's like the repos that are popular that has a lot of stars. Index them to figure out what is it that people do, how do they interact with APIs, the various different APIs, NuGet packages, and just .NET framework APIs and so on. Not only can it do that publicly and create a machine learning model out of it, and that's exactly what it did in the very beginning, but it can also do it now on your own code. So this is pretty cool. So it can basically take that sort of public model, and it can have a model that's based on your code base, and it can kind of combine the two to give you an even stronger sort of suggestion to what you may need or what you may want to do to make that super easy for you. So it's all about like saving keystrokes, make you more productive by listening to hints, understanding sort of what you're doing, figuring out what is the context that we're in right now. When you're writing a method, for instance, are you in an if statement? Are you in a for loop? What is the exact context? And then based on that, that's sort of an AI kind of concept to figure context, to understand context. And then it can then go into the machine learning model and figure out, well, what is it based on this context and what has been previously written on this line or in this method? What is the most likely thing that the user is going to do next? And if there's and it listens to all these different type of hints that the user does, we call them hints, right? And based on that, if there is a certain degree of certainty, and there's a threshold somewhere, if we're pretty certain that the next thing is going to be, you know, this, you know, X, let's call it X, then IntelliCode will suggest to do X for you. So that's kind of where we are today, where we can even go and suggest the entire line of code that you're about to write based on what you just wrote and based on the context you're in, based on the machine learning model from public repositories and your own inside your organization or your open source project or whatever. And so it just keeps getting stronger and stronger and better and better. And, you know, you might think, oh man, someone suggesting that I do things all the time, that could go and be pretty annoying. And you know, it actually was. I'm not going to lie. It kind of was because, as the team started to do more and more, it was became very clear that we had to find the right balance between being, too much in your face or too annoying versus adding value and making more productive. And there's a balance somewhere. And it was funny on the internal builds that we had, you could kind of see that progression from actually being kind of not so useful in the beginning or only sometimes useful to becoming more and more useful and less annoying. Like they really nailed down that balance where they had to do, like the certainty level had to be at a certain threshold, and the more hints that they would pick up on, the more accurate they could be. And that's now to the point in Visual Studio 2022 where it's not only have they gotten so good at predicting what you want to write, but if you don't want the entire line, let's say the entire line of code, you only want part of it, or maybe you don't want any of it. It is no longer like it's not annoying at all. It doesn't interfere with your typing, your muscle memory, or anything like that. It goes away really, really quickly as you start typing or dismiss things. So it's something that's been so fun to see. And it's also one of the things that people have been tweeting to us mostly about and communicating is like how much they love IntelliCode. So if you haven't yet, you should try it out. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, one thing I would point out is that at least in the preview, you have to actively turn it on. The default is for it to be off.
Yeah, there's in the preview, there's a few defaults that is not going to be there for the final release. So in the final release, you should be just fine. IntelliCode is on, and you should just by virtue of getting Visual Studio 2022, you get IntelliCode to try it on. You can turn it off if you don't want like most of the features, but I have a feeling you'll find it very helpful.
Great. Before I let you go, are there any other major features of 2022 that we should be paying attention to?
There's a lot. There's a lot for Git users, such as submodules and blah, blah, all sorts of things. But one that I really like is cross-platform unit testing. Because, you know, not only in Visual Studio on both for C++ and .NET, you can run and debug your app on Linux, right, using WSL2. So you can run like Ubuntu or Debian or whatever Linux distro you want. You can actually have your app execute in there and you can run, you can attach debugger, you can set breakpoints in Visual Studio on Windows, but your entire app is running on Linux, whether that be ASP.NET or a desktop app or whatever it might be. So, but as a new thing, you can now also run unit tests. So that's back to that whole inner loop thing, where how would you run a unit test on both Windows and Linux before? Let's say that your app has to run on both, or you want to develop in Windows, but this particular app you actually run in a data center on Linux, for instance. Well, how do you run those unit tests on that same environment on your local machine? That has been the problem so far, right? And you have to wait for a CI machine to run your unit tests, and then 10 minutes later, after you commit your change, you would know whether or not the test passed. And when I say 10 minutes, sometimes it's an hour, right? Depending on your setup. But so being able to do that directly within Visual Studio is like absolutely game-changing, phenomenal. And I'm very, very excited for that. Especially now that, .NET Core or .NET is cross-platform and everything, right? It's like, it's so obvious that it's something that would benefit a lot of people. Very excited for that.
The key thing that I keep hearing in what you're saying and that I experience with the previews is this increase in productivity that you've got not only code completion, but the IntelliCode, which is capable of really providing likely code that you can just accept. And you also have a higher overall performance. It seems like the loading speed is quicker and the cycle, the write, test, debug, recompile cycle seems much quicker, especially because of hot reload. Have I got all that right?
Yeah, you nailed it.